Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. The website's jackiecation.com, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com if you like a determiner. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video. Vilmos works on JackieCation.com. And Mike Rickberg sang the song with his wife, Sarah. He composed it, and he will sing his version of the Mexican hat dance at the end of this show. Thank you so much for listening to the Dork Forest. Here's a scoop. I'm doing stand-up online. A lot of Zoom shows will eventually go back on the road. Sign up for my email list. It's easy to get off. It's harder to get on than it is to get off. And no harm, no foul, if ever bored. JackieCation.com. Sign up for the email list. You'll find out about my weekly Zoom shows and stand up on the road eventually. You may donate to the show if you would like. I would like. Sure, I would. There's PayPal, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and there is a PayPal button on both DorkForest.com and JackieCation.com, and there's Venmo if you like Venmo, Jackie-Cation, oddly enough. If you have listened to all of the shows, go to dorkforest.bandcamp.com, I think. The Dork Forest has a Bandcamp page. You can listen to a lot of ones that are free from pre-2009 when I started pre-recording. And then there's live episodes that cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge you a couple of bucks. There's also some stand-up. There's a story album that's very exciting there. And other than that, I have a lot of merch in my garage. Feel free to order if you know anybody who doesn't have any CDs or the DVD. And you can follow me everywhere at Jackie Cation. Let's get into the show. Hi, I'm Jackie Cation. I'm in my garage, and not my living room, but sitting in what looks to be some sort of wooded forest room is Brian Swartz, trumpet player extraordinaire and mash dork. But welcome to the program, Brian Swartz.
Thank you, Jackie. I have never had an introduction like that. So,
well, it's the glamour of 14 years of doing the Dork Forest. I stick the landing.
Hundreds of episodes.
Hundreds of episodes.
A little research coming in, and wow.
Yes. So, but let's let people know that it's at Brian Swartz, and Swartz is S-W-A-R-T-Z on Twitter, and you play. You do a lot of studio musician stuff, but you were an Oingo Boingo forever. And
just to clarify, I've been an Oingo Boingo since its reincarnation in 2005.
Oh, okay.
So I wasn't the original trumpet player. The original trumpet player, when the band broke up in 95, he drifted off into the ether somehow.
Do you think he brought his trumpet?
I don't know. Last I heard, I think he's not playing anymore, but I don't know. He was a Dale Turner, fantastic trumpet player.
That's neat. And
real big shoes to fill.
And you are a Grammy nominated, I believe, Grammy winner?
Well, there's this is a real fine point, you know, that I always feel like I need to clarify, because my name personally is not on any of the Grammy nominations or awards, although I played on the Dixie Chicks album that was in 2000, you know, Taken the Long Way, that was 2000.
That won the Grammy.
It won like four or five Grammys, you know, Album of the Year, Song of the Year, all of those things. And then just recently, the Monkestra, John Beasley, won a Grammy for an arrangement that he wrote that I played on.
Okay.
So he's getting the Grammy, but I played on the thing.
Fair enough.
And then there's also like the technical point that the band was nominated for Best Large Jazz Ensemble, has been three times. So I guess I'm included in that. But
what I'm saying to Rangers of the Dork Forest is that Brian Swartz is a hell of a trumpet player, and I love trumpet. And when we actually got on the Zoom call to do this show, which you can watch on YouTube, he was playing his flugelhorn, which I played poorly in high school. and only really wanted to play that Chuck Mancione song.
Oh, is that so, right?
Yes.
I can understand that. Not an easy song to play, by the way. As much, well,
you know, I was told I had very good embouchure. So let's leave it at that.
Oh, yeah, that could be real dicey.
It's hit. So, but there's the thing is so if people want to hear, like, you have an album, you have albums yourself out that people could just buy and listen to, right? Mm-hmm. And is it like if they go to Spotify or Amazon and just look up Brian Swartz Trumpet, mm-hmm. it'll come up, it'll happen.
Yeah, usually all of my albums are jazz albums. I've released as a leader, starting back in 2000. I released my first one.
Oh, cool.
So I have five out now. My fifth one just came out during the pandemic. I released an album.
Excellent. That's but not recorded over Zoom.
No, not recorded over Zoom. Actually, we just finished all of the sessions like January 2020.
Wow.
All of the in-person sessions. And then, then all of the mixing was done.
That can be done solo.
Yeah.
But trying to play ensemble, I mean, I've tried to sing Happy Birthday on Zoom.
Yeah.
It's like doing rounds.
It's nuts. There's latency. I'm even seeing like a delay to your voice coming through over Zoom. So, and that's kind of, I have to not watch that.
Oh, but, fair enough.
It's nearly impossible to do music that way. And there's, and you know, you also just have a wide variety of people's bandwidths and all that stuff. So it's really, really hard to try to do something over the internet.
Yes. So thank God your new album, which came out in 2020, To Be With You. Is that what it's called?
Precisely. Yeah.
In, from DistroKid and, To Be With You, Brian Swartz. But let's actually talk about the elephant in the room, which is a little television program that you could we mash. Can I see the tattoo? Can I please see the tattoo?
I
the lighting might be bad.
The lighting is very bad for it. Let me see.
Oh, all right. It's medical.
Is it? No, it's not a caduceus. Nope. You know, with the sword with the snake or the cross. No, it's, I mean, and that's sideways.
And it looks sort of Knights of Templar. Because I'm rotating it in my mind.
Yeah. It's on the door of the swamp.
Okay.
Okay.
And what year did you get this, Brian?
Actually, not until about 4 or 5 years ago, something like that.
This is a love that. Because MASH ended, I think, in 79, 82?
83.
Okay.
Was it 83? Yeah, 83.
Okay.
And I just got very curious about what that insignia was, because it looks like some kind of a military insignia also, you know, that might be on a uniform, on a shoulder or something.
Right.
So I started looking it up. And then discovered that it was also embossed on all of Somerset Maugham's books. And it was a symbol that Somerset Maugham was fond of.
Okay.
This is why it seemed to mean so much to me, because I liked MASH so much. But then Maugham is also my favorite author.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, I have to put this on my body. permanently.
Right. You know. So what does it mean though? Where did it come from?
Well, apparently it's, I looked it up. Moorish. Is that what it was?
Yes. That actually does. It's not that I didn't read the copious notes that you sent me, Brian Swartz. It's just, I didn't memorize them.
I don't blame you. It is an ancient Moorish symbol that, let's see, what does it say? It brings good luck and wards off evil. And I need as much of that warding off evil as I can possibly get.
Oh, cool.
And that's why it's on the back of my arm. So, like, people can't give me the evil eye behind me. So
that's, you know, it's a weird thing in the Armenian church, the vestments, mm-hmm. there's a weird sort of vampire cape. that they wear, and it has a high collar, and that's so the devil can't get you from behind.
Oh, okay.
So it's like that.
I get that. You know,
you do get that.
I would not want that to happen.
No, and the fact that it's on the back of your arm is outstanding. I love that. With the power of the sun is how much I love that. I loved MASH when I was a kid. And then by the time I was in college, it was in syndication hardcore. Like
yeah,
three times a day they were showing.
It was on a lot. Even just on, like, when we were in three-channel TV world, it was on all the time.
Yeah, it was on. It was literally three channel with a UHF or UHF. I think that's right.
Oh, you had a fancy TV.
Right. We had like a fourth, like channel 18 in Milwaukee. And it would show at 5:30. It would show at 7:30. It would show at 10:30.
Okay.
And it was so after school, you'd be like, but where are they? Is what you'd always say. Is Trapper still with us? What episodes am I about to watch? You're like, how late in the Charles situation am I? Is the guy from Ohio, the Lebanese guy, is he wearing his uniform or is he in dresses?
I always actually questioned whether they were even showing them in sequence at that point. I don't know if they were even doing it. I mean, of course, I guess maybe we're talking probably about the 80s. I guess they weren't. Maybe I wasn't that attuned to it. But once we got into it, once where it was on cable all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't even remember what channel it was on, but it was on cable all the time. Then they were showing it in sequence for sure. And then, you know, you knew when you got to the finale, OK, great, it's going to start over.
Yeah.
And the good episodes are coming again.
Because because it was a movie, right? Did you see? The actual film that it became a sit. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a novel, then it was a movie, and then.
Who wrote the novel?
Ronald Hooker. Richard Hooker, sorry.
Okay, and then it was a movie with, I think, Sutherland?
Yes, Donald Sutherland, Elliot Gould.
Yes.
Robert Duvall was in it. He was Frank Burns in the movie.
Oh, cool.
And
it was a dark movie, man.
Allie Kellerman was Margaret Houlihan, was Hot Lips Houlihan.
Hot Lips Houlihan. Okay. So did you watch it I don't even know. I think you're like 10 years younger than I am. But I mean, I think that the thing is did you watch it real time when you were a kid?
You know what? I struggle with this sometimes to think. I think I did because I think my parents watched it. You know, I think everybody watched it.
Everybody watched it.
When it was on. So I seem to remember that there are episodes that I remember watching originally, you know, when they first aired. But again, you know, I would have... I was born in 67. So, so when this was airing, I was real young, you know.
Right, but I was born in 65, and so those 2 years are pretty tight. I like pretty important when it comes to like remembering television.
Oh,
because I can't. But it looks like is because what I did was I had you sort of go through and pick your favorite episodes because I remember watching it and just loving. Because we're right after Vietnam in my mind, right? Mm-hmm. When I was a child, Vietnam was over once I became sort of sentient, and it was vilified and it was not celebrated in any way, mm-hmm. shape, or form, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, MASH came on, and it was sort of it did a couple of things. It made you sympathetic to people who didn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And it also gave you this sort of horror of war kind of vibe.
Well, I also think that both the movie and the series were sort of made in protest, you know, were more like a protest to war rather than a celebration of it. And since it was at, you know, since it started during the Vietnam War, I'm sure it was a direct protest.
Direct. Yeah. But, you know. But it did humanize, you know, because I remember... You know, there's now they're canonized, right? Support the troops, support the troops, support the troops. Mm-hmm. Back then it was, anyone who joins the service is doing it because they want to murder people and rape babies.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how I was raised.
Did
you have
relatives that went over to Vietnam?
Yeah. One of my uncles went to Vietnam, but we weren't in touch with that side of the family. And I only found out later. All of my brothers had various medical, like my brother, Terry, I think would have been eligible for the draft.
Bone spurs.
And he had an actual bone degeneration in his hip.
Oh, okay.
And so he had one of his legs was shorter than the other. And so it was real. It wasn't a sort of a Donald Trump, you know, kind of, hey, I can't go. I'm doing my hair.
Yeah.
But my brother Phil could have gone, but he is deaf in one ear. My brother Scott has epilepsy, and my brother Russ was going to join the Navy. And my dad told him, I was in the Navy. Why don't you just get up at 5 o'clock in the morning a couple of times and see how fun that is? As my father liked to say, you could always just leave town. You don't have to join the service. You could just go somewhere else. And if you want to get out of town,
hop on a train and just.
Yes.
Have an adventure.
Because my father was in the Marines.
Oh, really?
He had joined the Navy in 54, I think. And he got out in 60 because he heard about Vietnam.
Oh.
And he joined in 54, and he joined the Navy, and he was a medic. And the Marines get their medics from the Navy.
Okay.
He didn't know that. And then, so all of a sudden he's with the Marines. And he's like, yeah, I wouldn't last a heartbeat with these guys. They're going to go very dangerous places and I'm going to die. So he did not re-up in 1960.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My father was a career Air Force bandsman. He was a trumpet player for the Air Force.
Oh, cool.
So we, you know, and I think he joined in, I want to say 57, 58.
Okay.
And retired. I think he retired around the time that I graduated high school, 86.
Wow. He was in for the 20.
30. Yeah. And,
30.
That was his whole career. Played music the whole time. But I also had an uncle who went to Vietnam. One was more of a grunt soldier. The other was a helicopter repairman, you know, like a mechanic.
Right.
They don't freely discuss it.
No, it sounds like a negative experience. So
And like you were saying, a lot of people, when they came home, you know, they were really, spat on and, unfavorably.
So what drew you? I mean, I would say what drew you to MASH, except for that it's fucking hilarious. So that's what drew me to MASH. I thought it was easily one of the funniest, darkest things I had ever seen.
That's an interesting way to put it, and that's probably a lot of why. Since I grew up not being in the military myself, but around military, there's a certain amount that I can relate to about all of the culture around the military, and you know, rank and how important it is, and you know,
yeah,
you know, how the enlisted people, you know, despise the officers, and officers think the enlisted people are nothing, and you know,
right, they're just there to be put to work.
So there's all of that, hilarious. I try to figure this out every once in a while, and I think really what I like over the long period of time is just I can always relate to the smart ass, Hawkeye, you know, like just the constantly making some stupid comment about any particular thing. And it's, you know, you have to make a joke. And I currently get admonished for it every, you know, in my day-to-day life.
Do you feel, so you mostly relate to Hawkeye? I mean, he's the coolest, obviously, though Trapper John.
Yeah. Well, You know, there's so many different weird things about these characters because, you know, Hawkeye was single the whole time. Mm-hmm. Trapper was married. BJ Honeycutt was married. But Trapper was just like acted as though he were single, you know. And
right. Also,
you know, this is the other thing that when I took this dive into making notes about this week, I'm like, you know, I wonder how much of this cancel culture is going to come down on this show, you know, like looking back and go, geez, they really treated women like crap. And
except for it's accurate. I mean, the thing is they treated, I mean, the thing is it is a slice of life. If you were to go back, I mean, so I remember as a kid watching Bewitched and I was like, what is she doing? Why is she waiting on these guys? They have legs. And so I don't know how it holds up. Have you watched some of it recently?
What? MASH?
MASH.
Yeah. the thing is, it's on Hulu. In fact, I made a note. Let's see. I'm currently season 7, episode 12 again. And I say again because I racked my brain to think of how many times I've seen all of the seasons.
Sure.
And
sure.
I honestly can't come up with a number.
And do you skip episodes? You cherry pick at this point?
You know, there's something I have a very weird, like, I can't think of the word, but like, you know, nature of like, no, I kind of feel like I need to go through all of them.
Oh, okay. So you're a completist.
There's a completist. I didn't know there was a thing for it. But there, every once in a while, there's one where like, I just can't watch that one again.
Right, right. So because you said your first favorite episode is in season 2.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with season 1?
I think it wasn't. I think the entire thing wasn't fleshed out. Like everybody's roles weren't completely fleshed out at that point, and how they were writing for the characters wasn't completely fleshed out.
So it's solidified by 2.
And so I think so. And then by 2, they were actually really starting to write, really starting to push and make something, a few artistic statements. Of course, you know, artistic within what we're talking about.
And quite honestly, was it... you're in a safe space, Brian Swartz. You are in the safest space to talk about your love of the art that is MASH, which I think it actually, somebody asked me the other day, they said, so did you watch comedy when you were a kid? And I said, no, I watch sitcoms.
Oh, that's
And I remember distinctly, I don't remember the line. That is the terrible part of this story. But it was, I wrote down a line that Charles said to BJ and Hawkeye in the tent. I remember where it was. I remember who the characters were, but I wrote down the line and my dad goes, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm going to use that line. That's a great line. Cause
in everyday life,
cause Charles just shut them down.
You recall what the line was?
I do not. I do not, Brian Swartz, making this story the worst story ever.
Frustrating to me because I could probably
do
the entire scenario around.
Right. Well, because, okay, so you say the first of your favorite episodes of season 2, episode 5.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Pierce and Mr. Hyde. Which one was that?
Which what? I'm sorry?
Which episode? What was the plot?
Well, that was the one where Hawkeye went through a bout of insomnia and couldn't get to sleep. And they kept having new casualties coming in, so he would get a rush of adrenaline and then just jump back in and start, you know, working with the casualties again. And he went through like 2 days of doing that and then started getting delirious and just wandering around the camp.
Right.
And the thing that I liked the most about it is very early in the episode, he had just come off a shift and Radar's trying to, you know, help him get into his, you know, hey, I'm supposed to help you get into bed or something. So And then a helicopter starts showing up. And so Hawkeye takes this look out the window, and there's this really great shot that's taken from outside the tent. And it's an above shot where you can see his face. You can see inside the tent. And it's just, it's just a really great shot. And it's one of those shots that just sticks in my mind of like one of the better shots.
Yeah.
Through the whole series.
That's cool. I'd have you ever been to the place where they because there's an old set, I think, up in the hills here in Los Angeles.
My heart would explode.
Oh,
no,
well, maybe.
I
haven't. Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Maybe when you return. It'll
whenever
be needed.
Be.
Yes. Whatever that would be. So how does, I forget how he gets to sleep. Cause I remember that episode. It was really good.
How does he finally get to sleep? I think he just, because they actually tried to tranquilize him and that didn't work. And I think he just ended up just passing out and sleeping. But it wasn't until the end of the episode. So he went through a couple, three days of this delirium.
Wow.
So to me, that actually was a really interesting thing, because he ended up going through this entire like soul searching thing, being in his delirium of why are we here? What is this all about? What is killing people about, you know? It really just questioned the whole meaning of war in general.
Right. It really does. I remember that episode where they shot, where he's dressed as Groucho and he does a very good Groucho impression.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in the whole message is just not, you know, it's not this glorification of war and
yeah,
how much they don't really want to be there. And I believe the draft was still in effect, which is why they were there. Right.
Yeah. It was in effect that it was actually, the draft was in effect up through the end of Vietnam, I want to say, sometime in the 70s, they stopped the draft.
Okay. So what was, season 2, episode 13, I'm just looking at your list here. It's called Deal Me Out.
Deal Me Out is where Pat Morita is a guest on that episode.
Oh, the Japanese actor Pat Morita playing a Korean guy?
Yeah, exactly.
And
but he was an American doctor.
Right.
I don't know if he was actually, I can't remember what his name was.
Oh, the episode. Okay.
But, and then also Alan Arbus is in that episode, who is the psychiatrist, you know,
Sidney Friedman. Can I, all right. I interrupt you, Brian Swartz.
Okay.
To tell
ahead.
You about my personal life, which is, I loved MASH so much that when I was about 13, I loved it. Dr. Friedman wrote to Sigmund Freud.
Yeah.
That was his voiceover, right? Yeah. My entire, from when I was 13 to when I was 19,
mm-hmm.
my diary, I wrote to Sigmund Freud because my parents told me that I was nuts and I was trying to figure out how to not be crazy.
My five favorite episodes.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the sixth one. Is Dear Sigmund.
Oh, okay.
So, seventh, I guess, because I said that the finale is like my sixth one. You have to kind of include that in your favorites. But so Deal Me Out, yeah. I kind of enjoyed any of the episodes where they were sitting around playing poker.
Yeah.
I just thought that was kind of a neat, you know, to see them enjoying some camaraderie kind of a thing. You
right,
know?
Right. Less sort of helicopters and...
Yeah.
So... What were they talking about at the pool at the poker?
Yes, nonsense. You know, just jokes, just and stupid poker jokes. You know, so and of course during that part, those seasons they still had the laugh track in there, which I guess they used less and less as it went along.
Oh, that's right. It was the first sitcom that didn't want to use the laugh track at all. And so they didn't use the laugh track in the operating room, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay, that's right. And I remember when someone told me that, I was like, I never noticed. I just either laughed or didn't laugh.
Well, I know that when Laura catches me watching MASH.
Laura House been on the show at least twice, ladies and gentlemen.
She says, I don't know how you can stand the laugh track. You know, that's the one thing she can't stand about it, you know.
Oh, okay.
Because it just, you know, who knows who these people are that were actually laughing, you know. So that's a bizarre thing. And actually, here's the thing. I don't know if you know, on the DVDs, you can silence the laugh track.
Oh my gosh. Really? One of the DVD extras on the MASH DVDs.
Yes.
That's kind of awesome.
Now I only have the first four seasons on DVD. They were gifted to me.
And I think that's probably fine. I mean, season five was okay, but they do tend to get a little dodgy as we go along.
They get very just overacted through the course of, like, once I get past where Frank Burns leaves, I just about can't handle it.
It's, yeah, when Frank Burns leaves, that is, I think everyone agrees that is where there's trouble. And there are good episodes with Charles, but there is no enemy, you know, there is no bad guy when Frank Burns leaves.
Yeah.
So then Houlihan becomes, you know, just sort of this tragic figure in a sitcom. So.
Well, and, you know, again, to bring up Laura, I've asked her about this because there are so many times where it just seems, especially in the later years, that Houlihan is just yelling. And I asked her one time, why does she just yell all the time? She goes, her part was written by men.
Yeah. Yeah. She's hysterical and a nymphomaniac in the beginning. And she's hysterical and tragic by the end of it.
Yeah.
I liked her better in the beginning. And there's one or two episodes where she gets to be human and they get to know that. It isn't good for women at all. It isn't a show for women. It was one of those shows where you watched it as a girl or as a woman going, well, I'm going to have to just try to just think of the humanity and relate to the humanity and not relate to the male-female thing.
Right.
Because she wasn't a whole person, right? I mean, and none of them particularly were. They all had glimpses into, like, there's episodes where Alan Alda's writing to his dad.
There were like three different episodes like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember thinking that those were pretty sweet.
They are. Yeah.
Some of like my favorite character was Radar, quite honestly, just because I, for some reason, related to him the most.
Hmm. I think he's essential to the show working. But I got to say, he's not always my favorite. There are places where, like an episode was featured, you know, where he was featured, where I'm just like, yeah, they really tried really hard to make that about him. And
right.
You know, like they're trying to make him fall in love with a woman who likes Tolstoy and Bach and, you know, all of that stuff.
Oh, right. They do the sort of the Pinocchio thing. It's not Pinocchio. It's the Scarlet Pimpernel. Who is the one who had the lines and would feed them to somebody?
Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's how the Dork Forest goes, by the way, is that we go from a Disney classic to the actual right answer. So,
We did it without researching it. Aren't we proud of
it? We did. Yeah, we are. Is the third episode, season three, episode 11, Adam's Rib, is that the one with the coleslaw?
That is the one with the coleslaw, and he orders the ribs from Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he got a craving, you know, because they had had the same food for like 21 days or something like that, you know.
Yeah. Fish. My brother fish Russ and my brother Phil references the coleslaw episode on the regular.
Oh, well, it's funny that you would call it the coleslaw episode because the punchline is they forgot the coleslaw.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So you sent all the way to Chicago and no coleslaw?
Right. It's, and that is a very good episode. And the fact that it got there, I remember a couple of times trying to figure out sort of the postal service and how it got there still edible kind of thing, you know?
Have you ever they go into pretty great detail in the episode about, hey, make sure it's packaged as medical, you know, supplies and, you know.
Oh, I forgot about that. Okay.
And so, yeah. And the, what about the barbecue sauce? Well, we can't use real blood in, you know, in experiments. So we use barbecue sauce. You know?
Oh my God. That's so funny. It was, what about, this next one, season 3, episode 24, Abyssinia Henry. I don't even know what that is.
That is when Henry gets, killed off.
Oh shit. I have to tell you that I saw that live.
And I think a lot of people did.
And I sobbed like a baby.
Yeah.
I it's so weird when a sitcom will make you cry and a character where you're just like, wait, did they just kill a guy at a sitcom? You know, like previously you're just watching Brady Bunch, right? And the Beverly Hillbillies. They're not going to kill off Granny and she's 100 years old.
Right. Unless... But and what they would do previously is they would kill her off and then just replace her with somebody who looked kind of like her, you know, like like in Bewitched, you know, they changed the husbands, you know,
and they did not mention why
they didn't say anything about it. Just a guy whose name is also Dick.
Yep. And then he's going to play Darren.
Dick York, Dick Sargent. OK, I guess that and he looks close enough. Like, OK, fine. Get it.
That's hilarious. It's I think that it's important. I was just thinking about how MASH itself might kind of, it kind of reminds me. Well, hello, Laura House, who's doing?
Hello.
Hello. I'm interviewing.
I can't hear.
Oh, God.
I'm video bombing.
You're Zoom bombing. This Dork Forest with Brian Swartz.
Mash. Klinger. Klinger. Rizzo.
Klinger. Here, what should I ask Brian about MASH?
Oh, gosh. I don't know what you've been
Nothing.
Talking about, but I can tell you he loves Frank Burns.
Oh, well, let's find out why. Okay. Brian, why do you like Frank Burns?
Well, first of all, the great Laura House people.
Mm-hmm.
I just like actually how they tormented him. I think that's really what it is. Cause he's that jerk that was always, you know, that was always around when you were at whatever age. There's jerks at any age, but, and you wish that there was somebody who would just torment this person so that, you know, you didn't have to. And so I don't know. I really enjoyed watching that. And right, that's another reason why the first 4 or 5 seasons are better.
Right. And then, and he's very much a guy that has power, that abuses the power.
Right.
And so it's not punching down at all because he is a major and they are captains.
Right.
They don't care.
Yeah.
That he is a major and they are captains.
Right.
He is having an affair with Hot Lips Houlihan, right?
Uh-huh.
And I don't know what to say. This is a real clock eater, though. I will tell you that. Laura House Zoom bombing the show, you guys. Very important. Look how adorable they are, though. Rangers of the Dork Forest.
Boy.
You got to watch this on YouTube because it's important to see how adorable Laura House and Brian Swartz are. And
I will leave you, but I do want to say I have walked in on him watching MASH so many times. It's like it's his porn.
It's
like he will like, oh, I was just watching He will be watching it on his own DVDs, even though they're all on Hulu. There's easier ways. He's like, no, no, I wanted the exact episode on the cartridge of my choice, et cetera, whatever.
He can turn off the laugh track, Laura House. I don't think you understand. You can turn off the laugh track.
On the DVD, you can turn off the laugh track.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
They really don't understand.
So you should like it because of that. You should like the DVDs because of, never mind.
Right, right.
You don't have to get it.
All right, love you guys.
Love you too. Let me say, again, the Dork Forest, a safe space. You get to love MASH as much as you want, Brian Swartz.
So no, I really enjoy how much they torment Frank Burns and how he just keeps coming, you know, it just never gets old for me to see him get it.
And there's no arc with him at all. Like, he never learns.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean,
he remains a terrible person until he is sent home and given a really sweet civilian gig, if I remember correctly.
He got, from what I remember, he got promoted. He got promoted to lieutenant colonel.
Wow.
And this was after, you know, this is, I can't remember if it was the end of season five or beginning of season five, or somewhere in season five, Margaret gets married and he, you know, shows up trying to foil the wedding, but he went to the wrong place and he was drunk and got thrown in jail. And then I don't know, somehow he got promoted and sent home. So
I have to say, there are lines from MASH that I think of, like Lipless Wonder.
That is a Frank Burns reference also.
It is. The Frank Burns episode where I can go in, I can go out, I can go in, I can go out. He's not under house arrest, it turns out.
Right, because, he said that to Hawkeye, because Hawkeye was under house arrest. And then in the same episode, Frank got mistaken. I don't know how to say this, but you know, like he got accused. Somebody yelled rape on him.
Okay.
And he was like, no, I wasn't, you know, I can't remember the actress's name who was the guest star on that show, but just to get out of being caught with him, she yelled rape. And so like he got caught with her and then he was under arrest. And then Hawkeye later did the same thing back to him. See, I can go in, I can go out.
And it's nice to be nice to the nice. That's my third Frank Burns line.
That's from one of the first episodes. That's from the one where Henry brought home a very young, like 21 year old.
Right. A young woman who he was sleeping with.
Yeah. Cheating on his wife, and he was going to leave his wife. And so he was introducing the girl to everybody, and that's
right. There was some good topics. Like there was the one guy who, with BJ, it was like the tall blonde soldier who had a non-wife and baby that he was just going to go home because he was going home. Mm. And he was going to leave his wife and his the mother of his child, who is Korean, and his baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I think BJ was taking, or was it Radar?
It was Radar.
Okay. Who was helping with the mother and child.
Yeah. What was happening originally was the guy was going home and he goes, hey, I have something I want you to take care of. And he introduced him to this woman.
Right, these people.
Well, and then he was like, oh, you have a baby too. And then he was like, oh, you want me to take care of both of them? And he's like, yeah. And okay, see ya, have fun. And it was like the guy just left.
Right.
And then later came back and was like, no, I can't do it. I have to take you with me. So the guy ended up coming back to take.
Right, right. The guy ended up being part of the solution. And admitting that he had a wife and child,
And then there was another time where Radar got accused of fathering a child by somebody else, by another woman, who just said, "Oh yeah, it was him. He said he was a doctor, and you know, and
oh,
we
right.
slept together." But Radar was like, "No, I didn't do it, but I do it, but I didn't do this."
Oh, right, right. There's a lot of talk about how Radar is super innocent, and I think that was one of the things I liked about him is because his character was from Iowa, if I remember correctly. Yep. And
as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay. And then in Wisconsin, you know, it's right there with Iowa. And so I felt like I related to him.
Well, I grew up part of one of the places my dad was stationed in the Air Force was off at Air Force Base, which is in Bellevue, Nebraska. So right outside of Omaha. So I have experienced the tundra that is Nebraska for sure.
I've done Nebraska. I've even done Bellevue.
No.
Yeah. The wind will cut you in half and count the rings in the winter.
yeah.
In North Dakota as well.
Experienced that wind chill factor for sure. Gnarly. We were there for most of my grade school years. Yeah.
Oh, really? Was your dad ever stationed in Minot?
No. That's Alaska, isn't it?
No, it's Minot, North Dakota.
North Dakota, no.
Yeah, there's a bunch of, if North Dakota were a country, it would be a nuclear power. It would be the most powerful country in the world as far as nukes.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's where all the silos are.
Oh, that's where the silos are. Well, the Offutt outside of Omaha was the bomber headquarters at the time. You know, so that's where all the B-52 bombers were.
Oh, right. And your dad was in the marching band.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Not a fighter. He's a lover, not a fighter.
He's a lover, not a fighter. He's a trumpet player, not a fighter. And so when Henry dies, then Colonel Potter?
Colonel Potter shows up.
Right. And he is awesome. Those were some of my favorite. I mean, as much as I like the Trapper, Henry, Frank Burns, those first episodes with that, you know, three episodes in, I would say Colonel Potter's my favorite.
Okay. I'll go along with like the beginning of Colonel Potter being there. But after a short period of time, it started getting.
Would it grate on you a little?
It really does, because they really started to write for this, you know, guy from Hannibal, Missouri, and, you know, and so he had all of these weird sayings that he would say, and, you know.
Yeah, and he had the horse stuff.
Yeah,
and
had the horse, you know, and to me that just got a little bit too much for me.
Right, right. That
when they overwrite for somebody like that. I don't know.
Yeah. It's so what's season 5, episode 17, Dear Ma?
417. Dear Ma is when Radar writes home.
Oh.
So that is an episode featuring Radar that I really liked.
Okay.
It starts out with him typing, and you know, they did have a nice way of presenting him in an innocent way where he would say things that, you know, he didn't know what he was saying, or, you know, like,
right.
He
was very simple. That actor had really, really good timing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you can tell that by how much, you know, when he was on Match Game also, you know,
oh, I love Match Game. And, but the way, as was Klinger, Jamie, whatever.
Jamie Farr.
That's it. Yeah. When the whole ensemble cast was clearly just really good at it. It felt like, you know, as much as Alan Alda was the star or the breakout star, it did feel more ensemble cast than a lot of sitcoms.
Yeah. And they had worked out a lot of timing, and I mean, they did so many episodes, you know, we watch shows now and the seasons are like 9 episodes, 11 episodes. These seasons of MASH are like 24 episodes.
Right. I noticed that one of your least favorite episodes, well, Abyssinia Henry is episode 24 in season 3, you say.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, but there's episode 25 in season 8. April yeah. Fools. Which one is, what is that? I don't even, April 8th, the 8th season, that was just, it was like nails on a chalkboard most of the
time. Yeah, I, you know, again, I think every once in a while they would get inspired, you know, and have like really good episodes that were in some of these seasons. And, you know, and I know year after year they were getting like Emmy nominations, weren't they? And
yeah.
Stuff like that. So, but there were just some real clunkers. April Fool's is where they're all just, I mean, obviously it's April Fool's Day and they're making an episode about pranking each other on, and the whole premise is, okay, BJ is the ultimate, you know, Hawkeye thinks he's the ultimate prankster, but BJ's like, nah, I really don't think you are. I think I am. And he goes, I bet I could get everybody, you know, I could prank everybody. And then Hawkeye's, yeah, well, I bet I'll be the last one that you do. And what ends up happening is he pranks. The only one who actually gets pranked is Hawkeye. And everybody was in on acting as though they had gotten pranked.
Okay. Yeah. That's exhausting.
It's painful. And the dialogue that ensues with all of that and acting as though this just happened, you know, these things just it's really very painful to watch. So consequently, when I get to this point in the series, and if I'm watching, you know, like I said, I'm on episodes or, you know, season 7, 12 right now. If I look it up on Hulu, which, because they got all the episodes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm currently on. I just get to a point where I'm like, okay, I feel like I really just need to push through this. and to be
I would
be
love honest, to give you permission to blow off any episode that you...
A lot of this is like, it's something that I put on, it's my nap show. You know, the show okay. that I put on when I'm going to take a nap or if I can't sleep. And there were, you know, several years where I, you know,
it was hard to sleep and it's
there
and
was
it's
nobody
soothing.
Watching and it didn't matter.
Yeah. 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 And it is soothing, quite honestly. And what about the episode? Do you remember the episode where we find out what BJ Honeycutt, what the BJ stands for?
Oh, it stands for B and J.
Right.
His parents' names were B. His mom was B and his dad was J. Yeah.
I remember I was like, is this what the whole episode is going to be about?
Yeah.
And then it actually, I did not, that had a pretty good payoff for me. I was all right with that.
Really? Well, but what isn't really the whole thing about the it's double entendre, you know, that they're trying to actually use the
BJ?
The BJ.
No BJ joke? Possibly. BJ joke. You would think I would recognize more dick jokes than I do. Sadly.
It's just a painful thing for me to, and I make myself go through it. And that's the worst part about it is I make myself endure the pain.
Yes. Here's the thing. I have to tell you that that the fact that you put you're like you have to put the finale on your favorites.
Uh-huh.
I remember watching that finale in real time and thinking, nope, this is overkill.
Mm.
This is way too much, mm-hmm. and it felt like, you know, just so much like the. It felt like a Harry Chapin song that had gone on way too long. And I was like, you're killing me. So.
I get that. I kind of fall back on that. There are not enough episodes that have Alan Arbus in them. Sidney Freedman.
Oh, okay.
So that's one of the ones where he's heavily involved. There's only about 6 episodes that he's actually in the entire run, I think. Maybe.
Well, I just remember that it was long, the season. Maybe it was just too long.
It was 2.5 hours.
Oh, God. It's a sitcom. It should be
And I think that's 30 minutes. Actual 2.5 hours, not 2.5 hours with commercials. You
right.
know.
Not 2 45-minute and a 22-minute. We're
right.
talking literally 2.5 hours. So, I mean, is it just, I mean, I love closure as much as the next person, but I don't need it. Just
you don't need 2.5 hours of closure. Is that what you're?
There must have been just too much minutia for me, because I'm sure that there were some great scenes in that final episode.
Mm-hmm. There are.
This is your cue to tell me them.
Oh, well, all of the revelations that Hawkeye had about the horrors of war and how his psyche covered them up while he was in the middle of them, and then. Realizing, okay, it's okay to have to realize that you're in the middle of horror.
Right.
You know, and that's probably the only way you're going to live through it.
Right.
Is to realize that that's what you're in the middle of. Not to let your mind make it something else. And
right.
It's really weird to think of it because, I certainly don't mean to trivialize the Korean War, but it was I think 2 years. And
yeah,
so a lot of this, I've done a lot of research about the Korean War. And so like a lot of this is, I don't know where they came up with all of the detail that they go into.
Well, the Korean War was, I remember watching it with my dad, and my dad going, you know, one of the interesting things about why we pulled out of Korea was because of the demilitarized zones. And MacArthur, and I could be misremembering this, and it's a story from Elliot Cation. So a couple of grains of salt, American public.
Okay.
So that MacArthur led troops over the into North Korea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And from North Korea, I think, into China, actually.
Oh.
And the Chinese fought back. And my dad was like, there were so many soldiers in the Chinese army that they didn't have enough guns for all of the soldiers.
Mm.
So when some of them just had, they were just carrying sticks.
Mm.
And when someone was killed in front of them with a gun, they would pick up the gun and keep coming.
Oh,
and he
okay.
said it was just waves and waves of soldiers that eventually the United States was like, oh, we have to get out of here.
Let's just call this. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's call this a draw. How do we call this a draw?
Yeah. Well, and there it stood. It still stands actually that way. Which is, again, reinforcing the point that what is the point of all of that? I mean,
right.
Yeah, so that, MacArthur, was starting to try to, he was trying to start something with China, sure.
Right, I think he definitely had political aspirations that never really manifested, but.
He might have even thought he was above that. I mean, wasn't he fired? By
Truman.
Eisenhower that fired him, or was?
Oh, it could have been Truman, but
Eisenhower came in 1952 because Kennedy was elected in 1960. So, and Truman had been there since
Roosevelt died.
Since Roosevelt died, yeah.
And in 1952 it was. Didn't Truman win in 1950? Hi, there's definitely some shouting at people's iPods. Who's listening to this on an iPod, you guys?
Ooh.
And we'll have to do another Dork Forest about the Korean War, because what they were doing is they were conflating all of the, you know, it was all a parable about Vietnam, but they were set in Korea, so they were trying to use Korea.
Yeah.
And you know, as the people left the show, you know, I mean, there was Klinger was left at the end, Alan Alda and BJ, right? Were and Houlihan.
Houlihan and Potter, yeah.
Okay. And that's who were left from the beginning.
Yeah, well, actually, the only ones that were all the way through the show were Houlihan and Pierce and Radar, but Radar left. Yeah, so Klinger came on pretty early. I want to say in like within the first season, but he wasn't in the first several episodes.
Right, and he was going for a Section 8, which is when I learned what a Section 8 was.
Sure, but I mean...
What?
And wearing dresses just constantly and coming up with new ways to do that and
well,
look
it's
like
wacky.
It's wacky. I'm pretty sure that's Laura's favorite is Klinger doing that stuff. I don't know. It appeals to her silliness. Although, you know, as it when Klinger stopped wearing dresses, it stopped being funny too, I think.
Right. A lot of things got lost in. And there was an episode where I think it was Sidney Freeman said, you can get out of the army. I'm just going to list you as a homosexual.
And a transvestite. Yeah.
And a transvestite. And he was like, well, you can't do that. I have to go back to Toledo.
I ain't any of those. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, it's so interesting how slow civilization does move. And how television can actually make it do a little leapfrogging, right? I mean, the Will and Grace TV show was not my favorite show. I was done watching sitcoms by the time Will and Grace came out.
Yeah, can't say I watched it.
But it did more to normalize homosexuality.
Oh, okay.
Than a lot, you know, than most things.
Okay.
And it was... It came out and a year later, because it was a hit, I forget the order of operations of this, but there was a gay character in almost every show. They were like, oh, you have to have a gay friend. And then Queer Eye for the Straight Guy or whatever that came out. And then there was the backlash of, well, it doesn't have to be quite so overt. Because people's sexuality doesn't have to be their entire personality, you know?
Right.
And we don't have to go with the caricatures. And when I think about what we learned from MASH, what do you think? I think we did. I think we learned a lot from it.
Well, another thing that I was thinking about. Yeah, I suppose you learned how to carry a character all the way through all of these seasons and be consistent, you know, with that character's personality. But now when I watch shows now, it seems like there's just more of a they do concentrate more on like an arc to a season. Like these were all just one-off episodes. Like you could watch any one of these episodes and it wouldn't ruin the sequence of the episodes at all.
Right. They were all monster of the week kind of things. They all stood alone.
Yeah.
But I think that it did all kinds of great things, I think, for society. MASH did. Like it normalized PTSD.
Yeah.
It normalized sort of a dislike of war. It helped. I even think that it helped with Asian, you know, a normalization of
I know that is the takeaway from some of it, although there was a lot of controversy about that there were different people from different countries representing Koreans.
Oh, you know, always. You were just like, there are more Koreans than there are plenty of Korean actors that they could have found. And
not to say that they didn't use great actors also, like Mako is a great actor. He's in a couple of episodes, you know. But like and Pat Morita, obviously great actor. Kelly Nakamura, the woman that played Nurse Callie, fantastic. You know, she was charming the whole time. She was in a lot of the seasons, by the way.
Right.
But you know, I know at the time, Margaret Houlihan's character was sort of, they were trying to really embody the women's movement at that time also.
And looking back in it, you're like, well, they failed, but at the time they didn't fail because they were what they were doing, what and what they do with sitcoms and television and movies and all this stuff is sort of just push it a little bit, you know? Uh-huh. And so we have wacky dressed Klinger, who can't accept homosexuality or transvestites. Mm-hmm. But he is also part of the normalization that people are different, you know?
Right.
And I think that there's like, I don't know how, I haven't watched it in so long. I don't know how it holds up, but it, those first couple of seasons, I'm sure there's some stuff that's jarring, but.
The amount of drinking is stunning. Those are the kind of things that I look back on and I go, oh my God, that's a lot of drinking that's going on. There's the amount of womanizing that's going on, and
right?
The demeaning of women is, mm-hmm. is astonishing. Mm-hmm. You know, but again, like you mentioned earlier, I think these are the kind of things that were going on in the military also, you know, that's.
Sure. And they're still going on. And I think that what they were trying to do is they had a different point and purpose. They were trying to talk about war. They weren't mm-hmm. trying to talk. And as the show began, they're like, well, we should also talk about feminism. We should also talk about racism. We should mm-hmm. also talk about abandoning your family. We should mm-hmm. also talk about psychological PTSD and, you know, and that's kind of why it got a little muddy in the later years.
Right. Yeah, and they did deal with racism. I mean, there are a couple of specific episodes where they deal with an officer who is being directly racist, and you know, and you know, there's, and it's also relative to the time, you know, like I said, I like about Margaret being, you know, a strong woman in a role like that. It's all relative to the time, how it was portrayed and all of that. So, meaning relative to the time that it was made, not necessarily, I mean, I guess, and it was also portrayed relative to the time that it was supposed to be representing.
Right. Right.
So I don't know. It's, but those are the, you know, you look back at it and you go, did they do enough, or were they pushing the edge? I don't know. I actually have a hard time with understanding even what the term "does it hold up" mean.
Interesting. Well, because, do you still enjoy it?
Well, if I watch one of my favorite movies when I was young, like Animal House or something like that, I don't separate it from the time that I saw it necessarily. It seems like one experience. So like watching that kind of like brings me back to that time that I saw it.
Oh, okay. You know? Which is, I think, why Star Wars is so like, because I'll watch Star Wars now. And when I saw it when I was 11, it blew my mind. And I watch it. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I interrupted you.
No, that's all right. You had a question. I want to hear it. No,
did you see what I wrote about Star Wars when it came out?
No.
In my notes, I went to see Star Wars and sat in the theater 5 showings in a row.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because it blew your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was really, really good.
Yeah, and I was like 10, and I guess they let, you know, parents just let their kids do anything they wanted in the 70s. Sure.
Yeah, it was, there was not a lot of direction, but they were like, go out, come back when I tell you to come back, and go wash your hands. And yeah. So, but the real situation is that, I can watch Star Wars now and separate it from that first time. Mm. And I could say, well, I still enjoy it. I still want to watch it. Not as often. Not 5 times in a row anymore.
Sure.
But I can see some of the problems with anything that I saw when I was 10. Mm. There's a window and you have to see some things. Mm. And I'm just curious, when I say, does it hold up? Is it still funny? Like, are there things that don't make you cringe when you laugh?
How many times can you listen to the same joke and laugh at it, though? That's another question. I mean...
Well, that's Laura's question to you.
Yeah, that's true.
I bet you do laugh.
Maybe not. You know, it's funny, though, because... Yeah, and again, I don't think this compulsion, whatever on whatever level it is about actually making myself laugh whenever I watch it. It's more just like sort of recreating, like we're saying, recreating a time, a feeling, a you know, taking okay, me back okay. where I can kind of check out. I go, okay, I know this, I know what's going on here, I know what's about to happen. I can, you know, like I follow there's a couple of MASH fan things on Twitter that I follow and. And they put up a picture and I go and I say what the line is that's going on in the picture. But there's also 16 other people that have said the line that's going on in that picture.
You're
but
never still, alone.
No, I'm not alone. Of course, it's Twitter. You're never alone on Twitter.
Brian Swartz, I have to tell you that we are over an hour at this point. And yeah. I think we've gotten a pretty good idea for someone who maybe hasn't seen MASH ever. Then you could watch it. And if you do watch it, we would both, I think, like to know if you think it holds up. And or at least I want to know it. Brian Swartz, by the way, is at Brian Swartz on Twitter. And it's brianswartz.com. And he is a trumpet player. He has a jazz group that he has 5 jazz albums. His current album is called To Be With You. Came out in 2020. On DistroKid, and play with the Monkestra Big Band and the Oingo Boingo former members, and you do a lot of studio work, and people should find your trumpet playing because it's outstanding.
Oh, that's really nice of you to say. Yeah, and hopefully we'll get to where you can hear me play with these groups again real soon, probably... Maybe by the fall, you know, things will start happening for music. Music has been really devastated during all of this. So it's really hard to say. And I also advocate for musicians not going out to play unless it's completely safe, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Try not to create a mosh pit of a virus. That'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want that either. Yeah.
Get vaccinated, folks.
I'm getting my first stab tomorrow. So,
all right. That's awesome, Brian. Thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. I'm a big fan, Jackie. So, consider you to be a good friend. So thank you for
having
me.
You're welcome. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?